So I want to focus tonight on the Haggadah. I really have two things I want to do. I want to talk about one broader theme I think you see throughout the Haggadah, and then I want to choose one particular part of the Haggadah to focus on and discuss that part of the Haggadah. So we'll start with the broader theme, and then we'll move into the more particular parts. The Haggadah is really, it's kind of a beloved text of Klal Yisrael. It's something which we see every single year, and we become familiar with it, we know what it says, but there's always something new to pull out of it. There's always new ideas, new themes, new lessons, new inspiration we can draw from it. And really the key is preparing in advance. Like right now, the fact we're all sitting here and we're going to learn together some ideas like Haggadah, we could pull out some new themes to make our Seder fresh and exciting every single year. So preparation is very important. The Yesod of the Haggadah, really of Pesach in general, is referred to as Zman Chirusenu. Pesach is the holiday of our freedom. But the freedom that we discuss, so obviously we're talking Avdus L'Chirus, that we went from slavery to freedom, that we're no longer slaves anymore. But we know that there's practices throughout the entire night of Pesach which extend that freedom further. I mean, it goes beyond just being free. Now I'm free to do what I want. That's not what we do. There's this concept that the freedom leads to some sort of semblance of royalty, of malchus. We know that throughout the Seder we'll discuss, there's many minhagim we have to show that we're not just free, but there's royalty. And I want to be able to draw a little bit of this idea of what it means to be royalty, why the Seder focuses on royalty in that way. And really the starting point, I think where you find that concept most clearly in the Torah itself, is on a certain mitzvah, which is relevant to the Karban Pesach. By the Karban Pesach, it says that etzem osish berubo. You're not allowed to break a bone of the Karban Pesach. So you have your karban, you're eating the meat, you're not allowed to break the bones. So typically, if it's really good meat, you might want to break a bone, suck out the juices, suck out the marrow, you might want to be able to break it so you can get every single little morsel off of it. It's a nice lamb chop. But there's an isser in the Torah not to break the bone of the karban. So why is that? So the Sefer Achinuch has a famous explanation of this mitzvah, why you can't break a bone of the Karban Pesach. And he says, "Mishor she'a mitzvah." The roots of the mitzvah are the following: Lizkor nisei Mitzrayim. We're supposed to remember all the miracles of Mitzrayim, like we've said before. The gamze geza min ashor she'nisker. But there's another branch of this as well. So number one, obviously, every mitzvah that we have on Pesach is remembering this Mitzrayim. But it says there's a particular idea of this mitzvah which is unique. She'ein kavod l'sarim v'yotzei eretz l'gror atzamos l'shavrim keklavim. It's not honorable. It's not dignified for noblemen. For officials of the government, for royalty, to start scraping away at bones and breaking them like dogs. Lo yeos la'asos kacha, it's not appropriate to do such things, ki mania am ha'ra'evim, except for starving people who are poor and impoverished, have to get every single morsel off the bone. V'alkein b'tchilos bo'enu v'yoskulos kol amim, so when we first begin to become Hashem's treasure nation, the Mitzvah Yisrael was when we became Hashem's people, at that moment, we step into our role of being a kingdom of Kohanim and Gekadosh. We're kings, we're queens, we're royalty. Every single year at that time on Pesach, we have to act like royalty, to show our really special standing that we have. We have to show that we're unique. And through acting in a royal manner, through acting in a way which is very dignified and honorable, this will be imprinted in our souls, in our whole psyche. It'll change us for the entire year through. So Sefer Chinuch finds a source in the Torah itself to show that we have to act like royalty on Pesach. And the mitzvah is not to break the bones of the karban. The explanation given is a very powerful point. That we have to see ourselves on Pesach. It's not just seeing ourselves, that's the reality. The reality as a Jew is royalty. We are princes and princesses, that's who we are, and we have to act accordingly. And if on Pesach, at least, we try to act in that manner, that should sit with us the entire year through. So one thing you see as an aside, the lessons of Pesach should stay with you throughout the entire year, that's number one. But in particular, this message about acting royalty is a very central message to the Haggadah, and that has to stay with us. Now, what does it mean that we're royalty? How do we see that in Pesach, and what does that mean exactly? So I think very, very simply, Hashem is called Melch Malchei Melech. Hashem is the King of all kings. And the very first statement that Moshe Rabbeinu makes to Paro is a message from Hashem. And that message is, B'ni Bechorei Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is my firstborn child. And he tells him, if you don't let them go, I'm going to kill your firstborn. But the introduction of Klal Yisrael to Paro through Moshe's mouth from Hashem is that these are my children. So Hashem is the king. He's the king of all kings. And we're the children. So the children of kings are princes and princesses. That's what the children are. And that's the essence of Klal Yisrael. We have to recognize that we're Hashem's children. And this really introduces the entire experience of Mitzrayim. The entire experience was Hashem stepping in and showing that these are my children. These are my precious children, and I care for them, I take care of them. So the goal of the Seder, we have a major, major focus on feeling like royalty, because we are royalty. That's who we are, and that's our role. We have to see ourselves in that way. This year, I usually get a new Haggadah every single year, something new, something fresh. So this year I got the Haggadah called Halekach Ve'alibuv, written by Rav Avram Shor Shlita. He's the son of Rav Gedalia Shor Zatzal, who's pretty well known through his Svarim. He's a Rav, in New York, a Hasidish type. So in his Haggadah, he speaks about this theme at length. Let me read you a little bit of his piece about acting like kings and how he explains it. And he uses this to explain the idea of Zman Chayru Seinu, because when we talk about being free, we're not just being free, like we said, we're actually acting like royalty. So, he says, Iker Tzis Mitzrayim Hu Lahasig Mashem Vavur B'Divrei Rav Shimon Ben Yochai. The main focus of Tzis Mitzrayim, that which we should take out of the whole story, is what's explained in the words of Shimon Bar Yochai in the Mishnah Masechah Shabbos. He says, Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachim Heim, that all Jews are B'nei Melachim, all Jews are princes and princesses. That statement is actually made not just as a cute idea, it's actually made as part of a halacha, meaning it's such a reality, it's such a solid concept that we actually apply halachically in certain situations that we have a status of royalty. And where it's relevant is not for our discussion right now, but it shows that a Jew has a status of royalty. So then he quotes what we just quoted. One of the focal points of the Karban Pesach in Tzitzis Mitzrayim is this mitzvah not to break the bone of the karban, as the Chinuch explains, because it teaches us how we're supposed to act. We're supposed to act like royalty and not become totally, not lower ourselves down like dogs to break bones and suck out the juices. And it says, this is what we tell the Ben Chacham. The Chacham and the Gada asked the question, what are the Eidos, Chukim, Mishpatim that Hashem has commanded you? He wants to know about the details of being a Jew. And he asks a very, very complex and clear question. And we always talk about the answer. The answer, it says, Afata emorlo kahilchos ha-pesach. You tell him, halacha ba-pesach. You tell him, imav tirach ha-pesach afikomen. You tell him, you're not allowed to eat after the Karban Pesach. So the way that we have it nowadays, we don't have a karban, so we don't eat after the afikomen. Afikomen is the last thing on the menu. You have 2 cups of wine, but that's it. In the days of the Karban Pesach, the last thing to eat was the Karban Pesach. And that, so the afikomen resembles that, so we don't eat after the afikomen. So the question is, why is that, and what are you telling the Ben Chacham exactly? Why is that so important for him to know? So there's been hundreds of explanations to this question. I'm sure you've discussed it at your Seder over the years. So it's a very, very commonly discussed question. But very, very simply, what's the reason about halacha in general? Why is it that you can't eat after the Karban Pesach? So there's a few different reasons given. One reason is given in the Talmud Yerushalmi. And how it's explained is that if the Karban Pesach is the final thing on the menu, that means that you'll eat beforehand so that you're full when the karban comes out. And there's a halacha to eat the Karban Pesach al hasova. You should be somewhat full when it's served. Again, reasons given for that vary, but there's an idea that should be the final thing on the menu, and you should be full when it comes out. So one explanation is because if you're not so hungry, you're not going to break any bones. If the first thing that came out after a long Erev Pesach and a long Seder, it's already 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, and you're ready to bring out the first course, the first thing is the Karban Pesach, everyone's been grabbing at it, breaking the bones, sucking everything out, it's very tempting. But if you already had the soup, and you had kneidlach in your soup, then you had your, you had kugels, and you had some chicken, whatever you had, and then finally out comes the lamb, you're like, okay, I'll eat it because I have to, it's a karban, I'm not going to break the bones, I'm not going to start grabbing every single morsel. So we tell the Ben Chacham this idea exactly, that the message, one message of this halacha, not to eat after the Karban Pesach, is that you shouldn't break any bones, and that's because you're a king. And therefore, kings don't break bones. Kings act with royalty, act with dignity. That's the way kings act. So that's a message, a central message to get across the Ben Chacham, which we wouldn't think that's the main message to give the Chacham. This is the wise child. But that becomes really one of the main messages that we give across to him based on this explanation. It's all the concept of Banim Atem Hashem Elokeichem. It says the Pesukim Chumash. It says that we are children to Hashem, and we have to maintain that level at all times. He says further, a very interesting idea. Look, this one's really a Chassidish Vort. But it's a good Vort. But it's Chassidish Vort. What I mean by that is that he takes the Pasuk very much out of its real context and its normal explanation, but he draws a lesson from it. So we have the pasuk in the Haggadah. We start telling the story, actually, of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the first thing it says, Arami Ovid Avi. So simply what that means, according to the Haggadah, is that Arami is Lavan, and he tried to destroy my father, Yaakov. And that's how the Haggadah explains it. And it says that, you know, Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim, etc. But it's how Lavan tried to destroy Yaakov. Rav Shor, in this Sefer, he wants to say a different understanding of this pasuk and more of a Hasidic pshat. This is not pshat in the pasuk. But he says Arami Ovid Avi can mean the following: that what Lavan was trying to do, at least Lavan's, you know, form of evil, when he tried to come and attack Yaakov, what was he trying to do? It was Ovid Avi. He was trying to destroy the concept that Hashem is my father. Arami, Lavan, Ovid destroyed Avi, the concept of Hashem being my father. I mean, we're trying to show how we are royalty or children to Hashem. And Lavan comes in, tries to say, no, forget Hashem. And he actually says, you know, your children are my children. He tries to step into Yaakov and say, forget about Hashem. You know, I'm the Zaidi over here. These are all my kids. And forget about who you think the father is. So that was what Lavan was trying to do. He was trying to erase from us the concept of Banu Matam Hashem Elokeinu. He was trying to erase from us the concept that we're Hashem's children. That's a Rami Ovid Avi. So when it says, Lavan Bikesh Lakoros HaKol, the Lavan wanted to uproot everything. Lavan tried to uproot our entire existence. So on this level, it means that if you stop thinking that you're a child of Hashem, if you don't see yourself as royalty, meaning that you are a princess or a prince because you come from Hashem, then the Sahara can get the best of you and you can lose everything. Because one of the most important feelings for a Jew to have is that we are children of Hashem. It's one of the most important feelings we can have. So at the Seder, there's so many things we do to get across this point. Number one is, like we said, there is this halacha of the Karm Pesach not to break the bones. That's the source of the Torah. We have the concept they're supposed to set the Seder table in the nicest manner possible. Now, for many of us, you know, our nicer dishes are chametz stick, and our Pesach dishes aren't quite the same. Some have their special Pesach sets. They have that special Pesach sets to bring out, which are very, very fancy. Technically, the halacha says your nicest dishes of the year should be used on Pesach because you're setting the table like royalty. Setting the Seder table is supposed to be, in itself, you know, Sfarim talk about the holiness of the Seder table. It's even quoted, I think the Baal Tanya says it, but it's quoted in the Mishnah Berurah even. Not to have a non-Jewish servant set the table for the Pesach. You know, you should do it yourself. Because the Kedusha of the Seder table is so special, you know, it should be done. So all your servants could take a break, you know. But, yeah, tell your servants they can have the night off. You know, But the Seder table should be the nicest, it should be fanciest, because it's royalty. It's a royal banquet that you're serving. The four cups of wine, so one reason given for that is also because, you know, when you're sitting down at a royal banquet, so there's drinking. And you're drinking wine is considered an upper class, you know, very special, noble activity. We have the custom to pour for each other. We don't pour for ourselves at the Seder because you should be served. You know, you're a prince, you're a princess, you're a queen, you're a king. You should be served by somebody else. So pour for each other. Some of the minhag to bring the water to the table for washing hands. That's also because if you're the king, you get served. You know, you don't have to get up and wash your own hands. You know, people bring you because you're a king, you're a queen. The idea of reclining at the Seder table, that was an action done by royalty. Now for us, it's kind of, you know, strange because no one does it anymore. But in the times of Chazal, Haseba, the way eating in a reclining position was the way that people ate at fancy banquets, and that's what we do with the Seder. Even the idea of wearing a kittel. Some say the idea of a man wearing a kittel on Pesach is because a kittel is also supposed to resemble some sort of royal robes, royal garment, etc. That's one reason given. But all these things are kind of knocking on one point. You know, then the point is that we have to see ourselves like royalty. If it's just freedom, you know, freedom and royalty are two separate things. But what we're trying to note at the Seder is that we are free to be Hashem's children. And you're Hashem's children, you feel that special level that you has, that we are royal, we are noble, we are special. So accordingly, we have to act like royalty as well. He says here, in Lech HaVelibuv, he actually brings down another Hasidic Shavort. There's a pasuk in Mishlei. It says, Musar Hashem b'ni al tim'as. So literally it means that the Musar of Hashem, you know, Hashem's lessons, Hashem's rebuke, my son, do not despise. That's the simple translation of the pasuk. But his Hasidic take on it is Musar Hashem. You know, the greatest lesson you can get from Hashem is Bini, is that you're my son. So Musar Hashem, the Musar from Hashem is to understand, Bani, that you are my son. And then, naturally, Al Tim'as, don't dirty yourself. Don't get yourself disgusting. Meaning that if you understand that you are a child of royalty, if you understand how special a Jew is, you won't get yourself involved in things that are inappropriate. You won't do things that are beneath royalty. You're going to make sure that you're acting in a royal manner at all times. I once heard someone say that what should be the most inspiring bracha for us every single morning is Elokai Neshama Shasat B'Tahura. Hashem, give me a pure neshama. Because if you know how pure your neshama is, you're not going to want to do anything to dirty it. You're going to keep your neshama as pure as Hashem gave it to you. And the problem is we don't understand how pure our neshamas are, so we do things which might somehow near taint who we are. But if we understood neshama shasat b'tahura, the neshama is so pure, then all day long we'd be perfect, because we don't want to take something which is so clean and so pure and damage it. Why would we do that? So this idea of if you understand that you're royalty, you know, al timas, you don't want to get yourself involved in anything disgusting. You know, you don't hear it. It's not something which fits so much in modern American, you know, culture. But all of us have heard the phrase, and it's pasnished. It's not befitting of you. And I know that Rabbi Lapiansky always says his father grew up in Lithuania as a survivor of the Holocaust. And he always says that, you know, his father never told him something was wrong, usser. He always said it's pasnished. It's just not appropriate for you to do. You know, you're beyond that. You know, and that's the way that a Jew should see themselves. It's not that. It's not just that I have to tell myself it's usser, I shouldn't do it. We should say that it's not befitting of me. I'm royalty. I'm Hashem's child. I have a pure neshama inside, and therefore it's not befitting of me to do whatever it is. It's not who I am. It's beneath me. We should feel that way. Royalty, you know, classically has felt that way. I guess in modern day politics, things might be different. But overall, people have felt that way, that if you're in a certain position of power, you don't lower yourself down in any way. It's pasnish, it's not befitting of you. So this is one focus on the Haggadah. It's the meaning of that we are banim. And there's a focus on the Haggadah of being children. You know, we always talk about the idea that the Haggadah focuses on the idea of children. A simple understanding is that you're passing on messages to your children. But yet, that doesn't fully answer the question, because even someone who has no children still has the same obligation to have the Haggadah. It doesn't mean they have no obligation to say the Haggadah. Everyone has the Chiyuv Daraisa. Men, women, and children have the Chiyuv Daraisa to say the Haggadah, despite the fact that whether they have children or no children, whether children are present or not present, doesn't matter. You have to say over the story of the Haggadah. So one focus on children is to recognize that we're all children of Hashem. And we're stressing that point to ourselves as well. Higadta Lebincha. The entire mitzvah is to tell over to children the story, which means tell ourselves the story. If someone, chas v'shalom, is by themselves on Pesach, they still have a chiyuv to take out the gada and tell themselves the story. The same obligation, and no one else to talk to. You should never have that. You know, that'd be a terrible situation. But the idea is because you're speaking to yourself. You're the child. And who are your child of? You're the child of Hashem. And that's a big focus in the Haggadah. There's another point about being a child, I think, which is relevant to the Haggadah as well. Very similar concept. But part of the idea of the Seder is not just to see ourselves as children of Hashem, but to see ourselves as Bnei Yisrael, that we're all children of the same nation. And what I mean by that is the following. You know, we talk a lot about Avas Yisrael, loving fellow Jews, but deep down, how much do we really feel connected to each other? Meaning that the concept of Haggadah is you should see yourselves kilu hu yatzim Mitzrayim, as if you left Egypt. So to really feel ourselves, and you know, we were there, and we were building in Mitzrayim, and we were suffering, and that's a level which I think is beyond us to really feel that. You know, we can relate to the fact this is our history, this story is very important to us, there's lessons to draw from it, but to really feel that we were there in Mitzrayim working, and we saw the Makos, and we crossed the Yamsuf, and we were freed, I mean, it seems kind of beyond us to feel that connected to it. I do believe there are ways to connect the stories emotionally. I think that we can do. I always say, just as an aside, you know, all of us have, you know, read a book or seen a movie or something that has gotten us emotional. You know, you can read a very well-written book and you'll cry with the characters, or you will rejoice with the characters. You can see a movie that's, you know, that's a tearjerker, you know, and it makes you at the end, you feel sad, scared, happy. So it is possible to read a story and really feel connected emotionally. It's possible. And that could be what it means, Kilas Mitzrayim, that you should make your Haggadah so real and so emotional that you feel connected. I think that's part of it. But the other part of it, I think, is that we should at least feel the relevance of the story to ourselves. It's not history. It's not just history. It's not some legend. It's not just some story where we're drawing out lessons from. Now, very often we read Chumash, or we read a Medrash, or we hear a story, and we know we should take lessons from it, and we do, but do we really feel connected to that story? That's really relevant to me personally. Like the Mashal, now anybody who thinks about, you know, the history of their parents or grandparents, so you feel that story is you, because that's who you are. If any of you had parents who were survivors, or grandparents with incredible stories of how they made it to America, or things like that, so you feel those stories are you. That's who you are, because that story produced you, that's where you're coming from, and we feel when it comes to immediate relatives. The Yotzei Mitzrayim, those who left Mitzrayim, are also our grandparents. And they went through the story in a very incredible story. It's a story, it's not just history, but it's our shared experience between us and all of Klai Yisrael together. And the deeper feeling that comes from it has to be that, you know, we're all one nation. If we see somebody who's a cousin of ours, a distant cousin, you feel an automatic bond, because, you know, we're family. Even somebody who might be a very distant cousin, this is a third cousin twice removed, you know, but if you know that, then suddenly the relationship is different, just because, you know, we're bonded in some way. Nowadays, it's not uncommon for people to search online family trees, and they can find, oh, wow, I have a fourth cousin living, you know, in Potomac. I can call them, I can get together and have a coffee and meet them. I've heard stories like that, you know, people finding cousins and getting together, and you feel an automatic bond, even though you're distant, because it's family. Do we feel that all Jews are family? We're all cousins, we're all fellow Jews, you know, we're all B'nai Yisrael, literally children of Yisrael. We're all the children of the same nation. Do we feel that way with every single Jew? I think that more often than not, I think we feel that we care for Jews and we try our best to help Jews out, but do we really feel that same bond we would feel with family? And part of the Seder is this focus on the fact that all of Klai Yisrael is one. We're all one family. Matzah is Gematria Kahal, the Kahal congregation, the same Gematria, with 135, same Gematria. The Karban Pesach had to be eaten. We call it celibes avos, you know, in family groups. You can get to the neighbors also. That'd be in groups all together. And there's this idea of people bonding together as one on Pesach. You know, even the idea of a Seder. A Seder is a time where we get to, family gets together. It's the biggest family time of the year in some ways, you know, in the Jewish household. And the idea is because Pesach, we're supposed to see ourselves as all one big family. Klai Yisrael has to feel for each other. I think that some of this is a little bit difficult for us, just because, you know, when the Jews, we don't wish for this, but when Jews were persecuted and thrown into a ghetto, and they were ousted by society, so they are forced to bond with one another, because that's all they had each other. But society accepts us, so we care for fellow Jews, but, you know, we don't feel that same bond, because we're mixed with everybody, you know, we're all part of the mix. When you read, like, Holocaust stories of survival, so people, you know, if you ran into a fellow Jew, even though you never met the person in your life, suddenly you were one team. You know, you were sisters, you were brothers, you were, you know, this is it. And you're in together, and you fight together, you survive together. All those stories, you feel that bond amongst Jews, and that's because they kind of force us into it. But we shouldn't need to be forced into it. You know, we should have that bond. Now, Baruch Hashem, modern times, you know, we're very much, you know, mixed in with society around, certainly in America, and we don't feel that natural bond all the time, but we should feel it. You know, it's funny, I felt this. You know, if you go on vacation, let's say. So, you know, my parents live in Atlanta. So often our vacations might be tied somewhere in the South, so we can double it up with a visit to my parents. So when you vacation in the North, you know you're going to see lots and lots of Jews around you. That's the nature. The Jewish population is more condensed in the North. You go vacationing anywhere, you know, in New York or Connecticut or New Hampshire or Vermont, you're going to run into lots of Jews. And we see other Jews, I guess it's not so surprising. It's not an automatic bond between you. You might say hi, but that's as far as it goes. I've experienced when you go somewhere that's very remote and you don't expect to see any Jews around you, and suddenly you see someone with a yarmulke walking by. Suddenly, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? It's good to see you. Do you have kosher food? Yeah, you want some food? Yeah, what do you do for shop? Sometimes there's a special bond. You're the person in your life. And you kind of feel it because you're the only two Jews around and you weren't expecting to see each other, and you're kind of forced. You feel that bond. You feel that it's somebody very familiar. You feel that it's a family member, somebody that you really, really feel connected to. My wife and I were out years ago at the in Utah, at the national parks, and we got invited to somebody's tent for Shabbos. We declined respectfully. Said, "Join us on our campsite for Shabbos. Come to our tent." You know, but they went. You know, but you went. Usually, you wouldn't feel just a stranger invite each other to your tent on Shabbos. It's such a funny thing. A Shabbos in a tent I've never had. That would have been an interesting experience. but you felt there's this bond there. There's a certain bond you find, and you feel that on occasion. And the Haggadah stresses this over and over again. Diachla Vasan Mitzrayim. This is what our ancestors ate. They were our ancestors. Our fathers ate in Mitzrayim. Asher Galon Golf So Sein. We constantly focus on these are our avos. Now this story is very relevant to us. This is our family. This is our lives. This is our history. This is who we are. And that's why we're called Bnei Yisrael. Now we are children of Yisrael. That's how we're described, because we're all one family. Like Shvatim said, Kulanu Bnei Ish Echad Nachnu. We're all the children of one person. We all come from the Avos Imahos. That's who we are. So if you go back to what we said before, Rami Ovid Avi, this is another Chassidus Pshat to add into this, is that maybe you could say Rami just tried to destroy from us the concept that we all have one, they're all one family. We all descend from Yaakov. Now, Lavan said, you know, don't think that you're from the Avos, I'm the father. Lavan told him, Habanim Banai, Vibnos Bosai, the sons are my sons, daughters are my daughters, and Yaakov, you're getting cut out of the picture. But we have to realize that we're all one family, we're all in it together, and this is a feeling that Pesach should bring. And Pesach should bring to us this concept that we're all connected with Klal Yisrael. It's an incredible thing. You picture yourself at the Seder and recognize that almost every single Jew, even those who are very assimilated, sitting down that same night talking about the same story, it's something that even the most assimilated Jews do. Everyone does it. Because this is who we are. This is our essence. This is our destiny. It's our history. It's everything about us. So at the Seder, there's a concept of Masori, or passing down generation to generation, all these ideas and concepts. And it creates Avas Yisrael because you're connecting with other Jews and seeing yourself as part of one big family. But I think furthermore, just that feeling that we're all one, we're all together, we can celebrate with each other simchas, we mourn with each other's distress, we help each other out, you know, we're all cousins, we're all brothers and sisters, and that feeling should become stronger at the Pesach Seder. And I really think on Pesach it can be felt, because you think about it, every Jew sitting down to that same exact story and telling about all the nisim, everything in their own way, but everyone's doing it, it's a very significant thing. That's, I think, another broader theme to focus on at the Seder. And Avas Yisrael is a major theme you find in Yetzias Mitzrayim. I don't want to get into this too long, but just really the concept of Avas Yisrael is a very central point. Many have pointed out that we have two dips, you know, on Pesach night. We'll talk about it in Manashtana, why are we dipping twice tonight? So I believe it's the Ben Ish Chai who says that, well, we enter Mitzrayim with a dip, and we left with a dip. Why? Because we went down to Mitzrayim when the brothers sold Yosef, and they took his coat and they dipped it into blood. And then after all the years of bondage in Mitzrayim, they left with a dip, because they had to dip the Ezov, you know, the bundle of hyssop, into the blood of the Karban Pesach. So the entire story began with Sinas Chinam, with brothers hating each other and selling Yosef, and that was a dip. And then the story ended with Klal Yisrael's Achdus coming together with a dip. So our two dips at the Seder represent, you know, going down to Mitzrayim with hatred and leaving Mitzrayim with love and brotherhood. So if we're going to take that message, that means that the Seder should create more of this achdus, this brotherhood, this love, this unity amongst Klal Yisrael. Because the whole experience began because the brothers, you know, didn't get along and sold Yosef. That's where it all began. So these are two themes I think you find throughout the entire Gada. The idea that we're Hashem's children and the idea that we are all children of one person, we're all one big family. With that in mind, I want to get into one particular part of the Haggadah. Might surprise you which one I'm going to choose. You'll see why. But the Haggadah is 15 steps. We call it a Seder. It's an order, because it goes in 15 steps. It's very orderly. There's a lot to do on the Seder night, and Chazal gave us a special Seder of how to do it, the order of how to do it. We're very organized. I always try to envision the Seder. It's like climbing a mountain. You know, you have a big job to do. Really, that starts now as you're cleaning and preparing and cooking, and you're starting your training for the mountain climb. And then at the Seder, you should be, you know, kind of elevating yourself step by step. Each step of the Seder is important. Each one has its own message. You know, each one should help you grow and understand and feel connected to the mitzvos and to Torah. When you're climbing a mountain, because there's an end goal. And the end goal of that mountain is, you know, you want to get to the top. If anybody's ever gone mountain climbing, so it's hard, it's long, but you get to the top, you feel to get this view, you feel accomplished. It's a great feeling. So the Seder ends with Nirtza. And Nirtza is, if we're looking at it as 15 steps trying to get you somewhere, so Nirtza is the top of the mountain. Now, Nirtza is when you've accomplished your goal, you've made it to the top. So I actually want to discuss Nirtza. You know, most Shiurim, I think, begin in the beginning and don't make it to Nirtza. So we'll start at the end, and we'll discuss Nirtza for a minute. And Nirtza is important because, you know, if Nirtza is supposed to be the goal of the entire night is to get ourselves to Nirtza, it must be that Nirtza has something in it which is very, very significant for us to reflect upon. So let's discuss Nirtza for a moment. Nirtza, what it means literally is pleased or accepted. So, you know, each step of the Seder has its directive. Kadesh, make Kiddush, Orchatz, you wash, eat your karpas, you know, break your matzah. Everything has its directive. Nirtza is interesting because Nirtza is a passive word. It means that pleased, accepted, nothing to do with Nirtza. And it's not an action. It's just like it's like a state of being. You know, you're in a certain, when you get to Nirtza, you're in a certain state. So the state of most of us in Nirtza is the sleeping state, you know, but that's not what it's supposed to be. Nirtza is supposed to be a state of being very, very pleased. To know the Seder is accepted, we'll discuss that more. Halachically, Nirtza has nothing to do. I mean, whatever we do at Nirtza and Haggadah is all minhagim. It's all minhagim that are added in over the years. Lalacha, Nirtza has no action. It's just that you've done everything else, now you are happy, now you are pleased. Or Hashem is pleased, now there's an acceptance of the Seder. So technically, if you got to, you finished Hallel, you had your fourth cup, you'd close this Haggadah and go to bed, clean up, go to bed. Because Nirtza is just a state of being. Nirtza is that I've accomplished so much. I've gone through the entire Seder, and now I'm pleased. Hashem has nachas from my actions, and I'm accomplished. That's really all Nirtza is. There's no obligations at Nirtza. So we have Minhag, we say a lot of Piyutim. All the famous songs we say at Nirtza, those are Minhagim which we have. There's no obligation, as much as we love Echa Miyodeh, there's no obligation to say it. It's the Minhag Yisrael to say it, but you know, if you had a Seder and didn't say Echa Miyodeh, you'd still be able to say your Seder. You had your Matzah, you said your Halal, you did everything else you had to do. So what is Nirtza really all about? Like, what are we supposed to do at Nirtza then? So the way I would describe it is, like we said before, we had a mushul of climbing a mountain. So you work so hard, you push yourself, you exert yourself, you get to the top, and you feel great. You're exhausted, you've just spent the whole day, your body is sore, you know, but you get to the top of the mountain, and you feel, I've accomplished something so major. You know, I've done so much. And you get up there, and you see the view, and you say, wow, how did I do that? That's amazing. Look where I've gotten. Look where I've taken myself. And Nirtza is really a time just to have that feeling, that you just revel in the moment that we've just experienced the Seder. You know, we've been zocher, we've got everything ready, you know, we've cleaned the house, we've kashered, we've cooked, you know, we went through all of those stages. That's all the training to have a mountain. You get to the Seder, and you start Kadesh Orchatz, and you have the discussions, you eat your Matzah, and your Marah, and your Korich, you say Halal, you get everything done. It's been a whirlwind of a few weeks, and the night, and everything else, and finally, you say, you know, we did it. But it's not like it's over, I get to go to sleep. It's like I feel so good. I feel so accomplished. Such nachas. It's just a time to take that moment and just revel in your accomplishments and to know that there's nothing to do, just to enjoy the fact that you've made a Seder and you've gotten there. Baruch Hashem, we were zocheh to make two simchas recently, the bar mitzvah and a bas mitzvah. And after, and everyone can relate, after you have a simcha, you work hard in preparing it. It's, you know, as things are going on, you're very, very focused. But afterward, you sit down and say, that was, you feel happy. You feel that, what a beautiful simcha. And everything turns out as you wish. You sit down and you say afterward, Nirtza. You know, you say that, I feel pleased. I feel things have gone as they're supposed to go. And now you can just enjoy the fact that all of your actions, you know, they produce. And you feel accomplished. You feel good. So Nirtza is that after all the toil in preparing for Pesach, you've accomplished greatly, and now it's time just to enjoy those accomplishments. You've brought nachas ruach to Hashem through all your mitzvos. Hashem is pleased with you, and you're pleased with what you've done. The Emunah Sitecha, Rav Moshe Wolfson Shlita, so he says about Nirtza, he says, this is kind of a funny line, but it's important for us as well. You know, very often, you know, we're so crazy about Pesach with all the details. And we get through the Seder and we're concerned, you know, did I clean that dish enough? And did I vacuum that corner? Did I have enough matzah? Maybe I ate it too slowly? Maybe my marah wasn't washed properly? You get yourself nervous with all these details in halacha. He says that Nirtza is the time to say, no, Hashem accepted it all. You know, Nirtza means it's accepted. I worked hard. If I did, it was done well. And Hashem accepts all of our mitzvos. So we can't be neurotic about all these details anymore. You know, we did our best. We tried really hard. And, you know, everything was done kelacha, as far as we can do it. And Nirtza means that, just be rest assured that what you've done is accepted by Hashem, you've done a great job, your mitzvahs are accepted, and you're able to say everything, and you've done well. So we're late and we're tired, but it's truly a time just to enjoy. And if we have an inspiring Seder, and a Nirtzah, it should be a very enjoyable time. It's the result of everything that we've done. So that's the picture of Nirtzah. Now, in Nirtzah, we have all these interesting piyutim, which have become, I guess, favorites of many people in Klal Yisrael. It starts with Chasal Seder Pesach. Chasal Seder Pesach, really, a lot of these piyutim, they come from the Yotzros of Shabbos HaGadol, or of Pesach. Most shuls don't say it, but if you look in your Seder, for many special Shabboses, there's always additions to make Shemon Esrei. Chassidim are more known to say it, and also like Yekesha Shuls. You go up to to Washington Heights, like the Breuers, they'll say these things, not as much longer. But there's a lot, if you consider, there's lots of things we call Yotzros or Krovos, and these are piyutim written for the occasion of different special Shabboses or Yomim Tovim. So a lot of what we say at the end of Nirtzah actually comes from the Yotzros of Shabbos HaGadol, I think is where a lot of them come from. So Chasal Seder Pesach is one of these things that come from the Yotzros. And Chasal Seder Pesach, so what it means literally is, the Seder Pesach, the order of Pesach has been completed, Kel Chaso, according to the Lacha, Kechol Mishpatov Chaso, based on all its laws. Then we say, Kasher Zachinu L'Sader Oso, just as we have merited to arrange the Seder and to perform it, Kein Nizkei L'Asoso, so too wish we shall be Zoche to do it. So I think the simple understanding is we should be Zoche to do it again next time. When this is being said at Shabbos HaGadol, it means as we've discussed the halachas, we should be zochet to actually perform the Seder. When you're saying it at the Seder, what are you asking to be zochet to do exactly? So you think it means to do it again next year. We should be zochet, we should be there for the next Seder and for next year's Seder. But one way you can understand it is that the Seder is a lot of discussion. The Seder is a lot of talk. The Seder is a lot of concepts. But Nizkei L'Asoso can mean that we should be zoche to actually apply these concepts to life, to perform the concepts. So just as we have been zoche l'sadr, so we've organized and arranged all the ideas of the Seder, kein Nizkei L'Asoso, we should be zoche to actually perform based on all these ideas. Because the Seder should be full of different concepts of hashkafa, of emuna, and we should gain a lot from the Seder. The discussion of the Seder should be something which inspires us. But we shouldn't end right there, because the ultimate goal is to take what you've learned at the Seder and apply it to your life. So you have a tefillah here, just as we're zochah to have a Seder and learn from the Seder, kein Nizkei L'Asoso, we should be zochah to perform in our lives based on the Seder. So that's one idea of Chasal Seder Pesach. And then the next piyut, so it changes based on the night. In the first night we have V'chein Vahi B'chatzi Alayla. The second night, the minhag is to say V'chein V'amartim Zevach Pesach. And both these piyutim are focusing on the Kedusha of Pesach itself. Meaning, if you look through what these mean, they list many, many events that occurred either at midnight, which is the first period at night, the second period is events that occurred on Pesach. And the idea is to show that, why is it that these events occurred on Pesach? What's the concept? It's because that Pesach is something which has so much Kedusha, it actually became the basis in history of many, many other events. I mean, that night is this Kaddish. That night is holy, that night is sanctified. So many things can occur on Pesach night, based on the Kedusha of the original Pesach. So for us, it kind of brings home the power of Pesach night. It's not just the history of occurring that one time, but it brought to history so much more. So it could do it for us as well. If we could preserve Pesach, preserve those feelings of the Seder, preserve the mitzvahs, preserve the Kedusha, and take it with us, it can also accomplish for us as well. If all these miracles could occur on Pesach, so that means that miracles can still occur for us based on Pesach. We have to preserve what the Seder gives to us and move from there. Next we have Kilo Naya, Kilo Yaya, which is kind of like a tongue twister. Everyone has their own special tunes for that one. But just one point to bring out from Kilo Naya, Kilo Yaya, it's talking about what's appropriate and fitting to praise Hashem with. So the tongue twister part, l'cha, 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 ki, l'cha, 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 shem, malacha, all those l'chas. So I saw that in the Haggadah of the Nesivis, Maisa Nisim it's called, Haggadah Maisa Nisim. So he actually tries to explain what all these l'chas are. What are the l'chas in Kilona, Kiloya? It's yours, so what are we referring to? So he says that l'cha, l'cha, the first two l'chas, that means that the malchus was yours, Hashem, you were the king, and the malchus will be returned to you as well. So l'cha, it was yours, u'l'cha, it will be yours. And then he says, Lecha ki lecha, means that the world belonged to you before Bereshis. Right? The world was, you know, whatever existed is always yours before. And Lecha af lecha means the world in the future is always yours. Like we say, Adon Olam Asher Malach, Hashem was the king. And then it says, Lachar ki lecha, when everything's done, he still will be the king. So we stress, Hashem, you were the king, you are the king. You were the king, you will be the king. The world was yours, the world will be yours. And then we say at the end, Lecha Hashem HaMalacha, Hashem, the Malchus is currently yours. It's not just in the past and the future, it's right now too. You know, sometimes we get caught up on the fact, yeah, Hashem did all these in Mitzrayim. And then we say, Hashem will bring Mashiach, but right now. Now, are we relating to Hashem as the king currently in our lives? So we say, Lecha Hashem HaMalacha, Hashem, currently right now, you're also the king. So that's the stress of all these Lechas. And Kilonoya Kiloyaya. And then we get to Adirhu. Adirhu, the focus is on the binyan of the Beis HaMikdash. And really, this is something the Seder should bring us towards. So the Seder should bring us to yearn for the final Geula. The Mitzrayim was the first redemption we had from Hashem. But the Seder is actually directed towards, okay, now we can be prepared for the final Geula to occur. It's pointed out, I think the Chasam Sofer says, that the first half of the Seder is focused on the past. You know, that's, you know, Kadesh Orchatz Karpas Yachatz, Magi, the story of Yisrael, that's all focused on the past. After the Suda, the focus now becomes the future. We know that, you know, for instance, the Afikomen, Safun, so many say the idea of Safun refers to the Pasuk, Marav Tuvcha, how much is the goodness, Asher Safanta, they've hidden away for those who fear you. It's Safanta and Safun are the same term, which is the schar in the future. So Tzafun, you know, the Afikomen is as if we're representing that we had our matzah in the past, and now there's going to be schar in the future for us as well. Then in benching, there's a special line we say at the Seder, which we won't say any other time of year. The line in benching says that Hashem should bring us to the day which is kulo tov, and then we say that have the day where tzaddikim sit with crowns on their heads, and they enjoy the glow of the Shekhinah, and our portion should be amongst them. But it's a description of Lasid Lavel, of Schar Noam Haba, of the future. And then Hallel, the beginning of Hallel was said before the meal, that focuses on Yetzias Mitzrayim. But then the rest of Hallel has a lot of focus also on the future redemption. And then after that, as we get into Nirtza, a lot also, as we said, has to do with the future as well. So the second half of the Haggadah, and also Shvoch HaMascha, we say Hashem, spilt your wrath upon the Goyim, Eliyahu Navi should come and save us. That's all in the second half of the Haggadah. So Adirhu, which talks about the building of the third Beis HaMikdash, Adirhu is supposed to be also, when we finish the Seder, we should have a greater yearning for the final Geula and recognize if Hashem brought the first Geula, Hashem will also bring the final Geula as well. Now, I like to put it that Hashem's actions never go to waste. So Hashem is willing to come into Mitzrayim and save us and make us into His nation. Hashem will bring us to the end goal. It's a guarantee. Because why would Hashem go out of his way, kevayachol, to do all these things to save Klal Yisrael, if he's first going to end up, you know, finishing off history destroyed? It doesn't make any sense. Obviously, Hashem will reach his end goal, which is to bring us to Mashiach and into the final Geula, and that's the yearning of Adirhu. Then we get to Echad Miyodea. Echad Miyodea is a fascinating piyut. You know, it sounds kind of like a children's song. You're going through the numbers. Like, who knows one? It's like a Moshi always sings. And what's the idea of Echa Miyodea? So I saw two beautiful ideas relevant to Echa Miyodea. Number one is also said by Rav Wolfson in Mussi Techa. Rav Wolfson says he brings it from the Kloisenberger Rebbe. The Kloisenberger Rebbe said that, you know, if you own a business, so at the end of the day or the week, you'll sit down and you'll make an accounting of all your profits. You know, I sold this, I got this money came in, you know, this merchandise sold, this didn't sell, and you'll go through everything that you accomplished and you'll try to keep an account of it because this is your business. So he says, after the Seder, we also account for our profits. Now, what are our profits at the Seder? Well, it's the recognition of Hashem being Echad Elokeinu. It's recognizing that Hashem gave us the Luchos and the Torah. It's recognizing the power of the Avos and Imahos. These are the Yesodos that the Seder gives to us. So the Seder finishes, and we sit down together. Okay, well, let's make an accounting. One, we've learned about Hashem. Two, Luchos. And we go through all the different steps, and we discuss the Yesodos of Klal Yisrael to make the accounting of what we've learned. And ultimately, what we get down to is Echad Elokeinu Shemesh Mayim Va'aretz. You know, what is Hashem? Hashem is one, because that's the ultimate accounting of the Seder. So the true gains of the Seder in particular, and Yetzias Mitzrayim in general, are listing over here. It's the foundations of the Emunah of Klal Yisrael. So Nechem Yodea is that accounting the businessman makes after a good day at work. Additionally, this next pshat is brought in Halakha Ve'Libuv, this other Haggadah, for sure. So he says another point. He says that Echem Yodea is actually a test for ourselves. And the test is not that we know the facts. I mean, all of us can tell you that there's three avos. We can say there's two luchos. Those are things that we know in 7 days of the week. But it's a test for ourselves based on the following. You know, sometimes kids have a game. I don't know what you call it, but you say a word, and the next person's supposed to say the first thing that comes to their mind that associates that word. So I say blue, and then you'll say ocean, you'll say surfboard, and you'll say waves, and you'll say light, and everyone, you know, it just goes around. The first thing that comes to your mind, you say it based on the word the person said before you. So somebody who is so inspired and so engrossed in the Seder, so your immediate reaction to hearing these numbers should be Torah concepts. We hear the number two, you say Luchos. That's the first thing that comes to your mind. You hear one, you say Hashem. That's the first thing that comes to your mind. Nothing else. So after the Seder, we should be so connected to Emunah, so connected to the story of Sitz Mitzrayim and the history of Klal Yisrael, that our reaction to all words is going to be some concept of Emunah. It's the natural response. So just like that, the game the kids play, where you just want to say, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? So the first thing comes, so Echem Yodea, immediately, Hashem, that's the first thing that comes to your mind. Shnayim, Luchos, because that's what you're thinking about. That's where your head is. That's where your neshama is after the Seder. So Echem Yodea is bringing us is trying to show us what we've accomplished, what we've gained, and trying to show us that this idea should become so natural to us. These are the first things we think about. And ultimately, the goal of it all is the Echad Elokeinu Shemayim Varas, that Hashem is one. That's obviously, if there's one thing to walk away from the Seder with, it's no Hashem is one. That's the Yisod of Emunah, that's the Yisod of who we are. There's actually something said about a part very early on the Haggadah. We know we tell the story of the famous Seder in Bnei Brak, Rabbi Kiva, and Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Tarfin, etc. We're all sitting around having a Seder, and the students came in and they told them, you know, Rabbi Seinu, Yigiyazman Kriyas Mashal Shacharis. They told him, it's time to say Shema, it's the morning already. You sat there all night long. So, again, many Chassidish Sfarim explain that the symbolism of saying, Rabbi Yisai, it's time to say Kriyas Mashal Shacharis, is that ultimately the goal of the Seder should be like Kriyas Shema. Kriyas Shema is where we connect to Hashem as the one and only God. Kaboso Machus Shemayim. Kriyas Shema is the proclamation of our Emunah. So a Seder should bring one to a belief like Kriyas Shema does. It should bring us to, what?
You don't say Kriyas Shema.
You don't, but it should bring us that same feeling. That's what I'm saying. It's the same feeling of Kriyas Shema. The Seder should bring us that feeling of Kriyas Shema, that Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That's what Seder should bring us. So when they told all those great Rabbanim that it's time for Kriyas Shema Shel Shacharis, the message is that the Seder should bring one to the concepts of Kriyas Shema. And the concept of Kriyas Shema is the foundations of Emunah. So Echad Elokeinu Shemayim Va'aretz and Echem Yodea is the same thing. That the foundation of Emunah is Hashem is one, and the Seder should bring us to that recognition. And then finally, the Seder ends with everyone's favorite Chad Gadya. Right? Chad Gadya has become a very beloved piyut in Klal Yisrael. Many, many Mefarshim have struggled over the symbolism. The general idea is that it seems to be some mushled history of Klal Yisrael being the poor little goat who gets beaten up by all these nations, and then Hashem comes and protects us. That seems to be the major message. Many Mefarshim give different comparisons as to who is the cat and who is the stick and who is the fire, etc. So I'm not going to go into those details. Everyone can look at their own Haggadahs, and every Haggadah has its own take on what these represent. But the message of Chag Gadya is very, very clear. The message of Chag Gadya is the very last paragraph, Asakosh Baruch Hu, that Hashem comes and takes care of everything. The Seder ends with Chag Gadya. And Chag Gadya shows, you know, the world is here, and there are people who out there who are Rishayim. There's injustice in the world. People will attack, people will kill, people will take law into their own hands when they're not supposed to. And sometimes, you know, if you are only in the part of history where the ox is coming, or you're in the part of history where the water is coming, then you don't see how it's all going to come together. Where is Hashem? How does he do justice? And really, but all of history ends. The future, the destiny of all Klal Yisrael and all of history in the entire world is Asakosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is going to come. And when Hashem comes, justice will be done. Everything will fit together. We'll understand how it all works out. The first place this happened was in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim we learned that Hashem does justice, that Hashem punishes the wicked, rewards the righteous. We learned that in Mitzrayim. And this is the emes in the future. Now this is, it will be exposed that Hashem, that everything has its place, everything is accounted for, Hashem's on top of it all. So Chagadja is this final piyut. But you walk away at the Seder, the last thing you say is Asa Kadosh Baruch Hashem comes and everything falls into place. There are people, maybe you have, different families have their own different, you know, minhagim and different versions of Chagadja, you know, that might go back the previous generations. You know, in my family, my grandmother used to sing a Yiddish Chagadja, but it wasn't really about a goat, it was about an apple. It was apple vil nishfal. You know, the apple wouldn't fall from the tree. And basically the story goes that there's an apple on a tree, everyone comes along to try to pick the apple, and no one gets the apple off the tree. And then at the end it says, Kim Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem comes, and then basically everything works, and the apple falls off the tree. You know, that's, I don't know why it's an apple, not a goat. It's the same story, more or less, but instead of the apple, there's a goat. Instead of the goat, there's an apple involved. But it's that message. It's that, you know, nothing in history really is functioning without Hashem on top, controlling it all. When Hashem comes, everything kind of works and makes sense, and justice is served, and everything kind of fits into its place. When Hashem's out of the picture, again, if you're stuck in the part of history where it's just the fire or the water or the stick or the ox coming, and you don't see Hashem coming, so then it looks like there's injustice here. There's just people killing and persecuting, and there's torture and torment. But the Seder at the end says that Hashem's will play out at the end. Hashem will reach his goal, and the world is going to end up in a place where we see Vasa Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem comes, and he kills out all the evil. And what remains will be that Chagadja, you know, that innocent little goat, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's how the Haggadah finishes. So Nirtza, despite the fact that Nirtza halachically doesn't require you to do anything, and as we said, halachically Nirtza is just a state of being, it's a feeling of accomplishment. These piyutim do, I think, carry very, very important, relevant messages to the entire Seder and to the Haggadah. And if we can somehow, you know, muster up the strength at the end of the long nights when we're tired and it's, you know, whatever time your Seder goes to focus on the meaning of this piyutim, we can gain a lot and walk away from the Seder. Instead of falling asleep on the table, walk away feeling a little bit more invigorated, you know, based on the end of the Haggadah. Hashem Recha Kasher V'Sameach. Hashem, I guess we'll... Thank you. And we'll...